Good evening, I am Gary Black with the KUAC News Minor Update. The last six of the 13 mushers who completed this year's Yukon Quest finished the race yesterday in Whitehorse. Despite slower times, the back of the pack of mushers completed a race which half of the field didn't even make it, and as KUAC's Zoe Rome reports, they're feeling pretty good about the experience.
The 2018 Yukon Quest ended late at night in a flurry of fresh snow as the Red Lantern, Nathaniel Hamlin, crossed the finish line. As the trail is buried under a layer of fresh powder, mushers have been catching up on rest and food while taking the time to reflect on their experience. Rookies Alex Buteau and Riley Dyke, along with longtime veteran Dave Dalton, shared their experiences with me at the finish line. Dyke shares how much he's learned from the quest.
Oh man, I definitely learned more in the first 7 days of this race than I learned in the last 7 years.
Dyke didn't even know what to expect.
Prepping for a 1,000-mile race when you've never run one, you don't really know what you're even prepping for.
Buteau explains the challenges of a true wilderness race.
500 miles and there's two resupply points, two places to stop and resupply with gear for 500 miles, which is just outrageous.
While Buteau and Dyke's goals were to finish the quest, they both have their sights set on different goals for this off-season. Dyke is working on training his next batch of puppies, while Buteau just wants to get out and camp with his pups.
I have a lot of fun taking small dog teams on camping trips up into the mountains in the springtime, and that will always be something that I do, than to challenge them and to watch them just, you know, exceed expectations is a lot of fun. And you can do that in so many other ways than racing.
Seasoned veteran Dave Dalton, who has run the quest 22 times, said this year was especially hard.
It was a tough race for me. The dogs did well, though.
Despite all the difficulties, Dave Dalton will be back next year.
Every year it's a different challenge, and I raise my own dogs. I raise them as pups, and I like to see how they mature each year and come together as a unit, as one team. So that's really what it's all about here, and I plan on coming back next year.
On the Yukon Quest Trail in Whitehorse, I'm Zoe Rome.
The State Senate approved a measure today that urges Congress to allow the sale of walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory products harvested and crafted by Alaska Native people. Senate Joint Resolution 4 asks Congress to exempt those crafts from laws passed by lawmakers in New York, California, Hawaii, and Washington that ban the possession and distribution of all ivory. The measure now goes to the State House for consideration. The resolution was sponsored by Senator Donnie Olson of Gallivan, who issued a written statement that says, quote, "While I understand the intention of some states to stop the atrocious poaching of African elephants for ivory, there exists a distinguishing feature between Alaskans who use the byproducts of harvest and those who go out to poach elephants." The Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act protects Alaska Native rights to harvest walrus and use parts of the animal to create handicrafts for sale in the United States. An art exhibit in Fairbanks seeks to raise social awareness even as it pushes boundaries in the fine arts. Decolonizing Alaska brings together Native and non-Native painters, sculptors, and multimedia artists to explore what it means to be Alaskan. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Asia Freeman, the curator of Decolonizing Alaska, says the project grew out of years of organizing and viewing other art exhibitions, as well as exploring her own art. Freeman is the artistic director for Homer's Bunnell Street Art Center, and she says over time she realized that art might be the best approach to addressing the social disruption Western culture imposed on Alaska Natives.
We've never had truth and reconciliation about this very dark and problematic past. And in this work, we can just start to speak some of these hard truths.
Freeman says through art, the individual can reclaim the power to own and express cultural identity. But the exhibition isn't restricted to only Alaska Native artists. Freeman says if society is to mature to a broader perspective, non-Indigenous artists were essential to the conversation. She says a common concern is the impact of climate change.
Our peripheral kind of location conceptually has really shifted to the center of some global conversations, and Alaskan artists are actively addressing that.
But if Decolonizing Alaska doesn't shy from addressing broad social themes, it's equally provocative when it comes to expression. Besides traditional forms such as painting and sculpture, the exhibit includes multimedia pieces, such as Joel Isaac's, which incorporates a video loop seen through a fish skin cover. He says the exhibition invited artists, native and non-native, a chance to break conventional expectations.
I think that's one of the things that the show really does well, is illustrates to other museums, other gallery spaces, that you can have this conversation. You can have it at a very high professional level, and it can be successful.
Indeed, besides touring Alaska venues, Decolonizing Alaska was shown at the Cochrane School of Art and Design in Washington, D.C., the nation's oldest art gallery. And following its current showing at the University of Alaska Museum of the North in Fairbanks, it heads for the Center for Contemporary Art and Culture in Portland, Oregon. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
And for more on tonight's stories or others, visit KUAC.org or Newsminer.com. I am Gary Black.